Welcome to the Wintrust Business Lunch. It's Suzanne Muschen sitting in for Steve Bertrand, who is out of town this week. You can follow me at Twitter at Big Payoff Radio. And we have an all-star lineup today. Later in the show, Amanda Lannert, who's the CEO of Jellyvision, is going to be joining us. We'll also have Chris Perry, who was a plaintiff in Hollingsworth versus Perry. You should Google that between now and when she comes in. She's the author of the book Love on Trial. But first, we have Terry Savage, who you all know because she's here all the time, and we love her. She's a nationally known expert for personal finances, the markets, and economic policy, and we have a ton to talk about.
So I'm ready.
Let's dive in.
Good to be sitting here with you.
Great to be with you. So the hearings are going on. I'm sure, are listening on CNN, although if they're listening to us, they're not. And so what I'm curious to understand is, why is the market not responding? Is this a new normal that we're just so jaded that things like this can now take place in our country and the markets say
and
what?
The world. Okay, now, right now, this minute, the Dow Jones Industrials are 21,136.59, up 0.36. In other words, basically unchanged. Let's also point out that we're within 0.5% of the market's all-time highs.
High,
and
right.
The S&P and NASDAQ are making highs. So that's the market is not reacting. It's reacting to what it collectively, the market's always right. The first thing you learn in the markets, you may think you know better. You may think, but this shouldn't be happening. But this is what I thought. And I know this company's gonna. But by the way, the market's always right. It sets the right price. And the market is not paying attention to what's going on in Washington or the terror attacks in London, particularly. The market's paying attention to the fact that there's a lot of money around. And trying to figure out in the world where's the best place to put it. London's not a great place to put it. Europe's doing better, but they've still got their problems. And look about Italy. That could be a real problem down the line. Japan's got such a slow economy. China, okay, but you don't go throw money in China. So a lot of the money sloshing around the world's coming here. And it's not getting scared out
and this
by the FBI or what will happen now. Yep. Would change maybe if there was something like Trump is found to have obstructed justice. You'd see that in the market for sure.
And this,
but not sure whether it would go up or down because that would mean Pence would be president.
And this doesn't surprise you, this sort of?
No. This is a different new kind of normal.
Okay.
This is the normal that money moves markets. And there's a lot of money that if you went out of the markets, where would it go? Gold went up for a while and it's $1,292 an ounce today. Bonds, people are buying bonds. Interest rates are down. Okay. So bond prices are up,
yeah.
But you know, who wants to get a little bit of yield? So the best place still, according to the consensus of where the world's money is the U.S. stock market.
Wow. It really is an amazing thing to watch. So also, I want to talk about this because this does feel like Wilf Blitzer level breaking news that you've been talking. I know. I feel like
that's
we need that sound
bite. Waving a flag and dancing a dance.
Right.
When
you
I
were
in.
Super excited when you came in because you've been on this show and everywhere else talking a lot about fixing Bright Start Illinois 529, the college savings plan. You've been talking about this for years and there's finally some breaking news.
Okay. Every state has a 529 college savings plan, and the state treasurers run them and pick the people that are going to pick the funds and so forth. And in Illinois, you even get a little tax break if for your contributions to Bright Start Savings. However, about 10 years ago, and it is exactly 10 years ago, funds managed by Oppenheimer in what they call age-based, supposed to get very conservative as you got close to college, in 2007-08, took a huge hit. Come to find out the portfolio managers, who were fired without any admission of guilt, but who were fired, had put in some very speculative stuff. And when the market crashed that fall and people looking for money for college next year were really out of luck. It was a terrible breach. In fact, Lisa Madigan led a consortium of attorneys generals because Oppenheimer managed these kinds of funds around the country for different states and got some money back. I said at the time that I thought Oppenheimer should be fired. They'll come and sue me now. I don't care. I said it. I called the chairman of Oppenheimer and they were owned by a big insurance company. And I left a message for that chairman saying, "You look what you did to families." Today, I don't know Illinois State Treasurer Michael Frerichs, but I'm going to give him a big hand.
Big plug.
He announced that the state is, number one, cutting fees. We were not a low-fee state. They're cutting fees basically in half. They're doing away with the annual fee, and they are letting Oppenheimer, the contract ended, but they could have gotten out of that contract long ago. And they have added a lot of new mutual funds. So I can officially say that after 10 years of literally, can I use the word, bitching about the Illinois Bright Start Savings Plan. It has now been reformed, and you get a tax break. And starting in July, you're going to have lots of lower fees and more choices. So brightstartsavings.com. That's the investment plan. By the way, sidebar, I know we have time here. We have another plan in Illinois. It's called College Illinois. It's a prepaid tuition plan. I have not changed my opinion of that. It's an obligation of the state of Illinois. Just look at what's going on. Sure, they may give you vouchers, but look what they're doing to fund education. So I would put no new money into College Illinois, but Bright Start Savings, congratulations.
You're way, you're
thanks,
state jumping
treasurer.
Up and down.
I am. I'm really happy about that.
Seated. Welcome back to the Wintrust Business Lunch. It's Suzanne Muschen sitting in for Steve Bertrand. You can follow me on Twitter at Big Payoff Radio. We have a great lineup coming up. We're going to be talking to Chris Perry, who's the executive director of the First 5 Years Fund, and an LGBT marriage activist, and someone you will definitely want to hear about. Her new book is called Love on Trial. But first, let's keep talking to Terry. So, Terry, there's more news. So the Department of Labor's fiduciary rule is going into effect, and I'm assuming you think that's a good thing.
Oh, I got two big buzzword things today, you know, the Bright Start and the fiduciary rule.
Good news.
Let's talk about what a fiduciary is. I've said this before, but I think it bears saying again, because despite attempts to from the brokerage industry to keep this from happening and the initial attempts from the current administration to delay it, judges ruled that it will go into effect, the fiduciary rule. What does the fiduciary rule say? That anybody who gives financial advice should, number one, put the client's interest ahead of their own.
Makes sense. Doesn't
that make sense?
Yep.
And number two, fully disclose all fees, commissions, rewards, those, you know, trips to Hawaii and all that stuff, and any other benefits they get from selling the product.
You common sense?
Yeah. Now,
you
the
think?
SEC couldn't get around protecting investors, but the Department of Labor regulates retirement accounts, IRAs. There are trillions of dollars now as people retire, roll their 401k into an IRA, and standing around are some very good people and also an army of salespeople trying to sell you annuities, sell you all kinds of crazy products that have huge fees or surrender charges or ongoing management charges embedded in them. And this is like, you know, walking into the hen house. There's like all the golden eggs of everybody, the nest eggs, are sitting there. And so this is coming just in time. Now, sadly, the brokerage industry, and there are a lot of great brokers, said, well, if we can't charge commissions and if we're going to have to prove that everything's in our client's best interests and so forth ahead of our own, what we'll do is we'll just charge a 1%, some 1.5% charge annual management fee on top of the underlying mutual fund fees for the investments people own. And gosh, I was really upset with that. Yeah. Because if you're Mrs. Smith and you got some good advice from your broker and you already rolled into these five funds and you know you're going to take a little out every year for your withdrawals, why do you have to pay 1%? Because you're not changing this.
Right.
Well, maybe to hold your hand, to stick it out in a market decline. At any rate, people said to me, but I don't want to pay this. What can you do? And I have a column up at terrysavage.com. It's part one of a two-part series called The Fiduciary Fee Fight with some ideas. If you're willing to do this yourself, three things you can do. First of all, you could negotiate that fee. If you have enough money in your account, ask. It doesn't have to be 1%.
And so how would that go? So you're sitting with your broker. What would you say?
I've loved working with you. You've made me a lot of money over the years. But I'm intending to sit pat with my asset allocation the way it is. I got these 12 funds and I think I'm fine. I'm not going to pay you 1%. Well, maybe we can go up to the parties that be and negotiate down from 1% to a half of 1% because I'd love to talk to you. Right. Okay. Number two, you can do a rollover from anywhere. Call Fidelity or Vanguard or T. Rowe Price. They are the low-cost people. They'll handle all the paperwork. There won't be any tax problems. And they will give you initial advice. Oh, you're 64 years old. You're approaching retirement. You're going to have to start withdrawing in 6 years. Here's why we think you should do it. And the funds underneath have lower fees, and there's no annual management fee. That's number two. Number three, there's a whole new kind of a thing out there called a robo-advisor. I could see you all getting scared. That's why I'm going to write part two next week about what you should get from people. Robo-advisors like Wealthfront and Betterment, they charge you a minuscule fee, and they invest you in various funds, and they automatically rebalance the markets up. You've made a fortune. You're thinking, great, I'm thinking risk. The robo-advisor sells some and puts you back in a more conservative
position. Don't you think they should rebrand it? It just sounds so untrustworthy.
Yeah, robo was the word that got there. It was just automatic.
You think of robo-calls, right?
Yeah.
The things you hate.
But robo-advisor gives you discipline, but they don't hold your hand. So next week, I'm going to write a column that says, okay, you really want someone to hold your hand, and they're going to charge you 1%. Here's what you should be getting, and here's the credentials they should have, because there are plenty of good brokers out there. A lot of them work in teams, and they give you all kinds of surrounding financial advice.
So you're trying to empower the everyday person who's making investments, right?
Exactly.
Okay.
And to pay a flat 1% fee if you're not going to use the services, or if you're not getting the kinds of services you should have in terms of advice is ridiculous. So anyway, fiduciary is coming into effect. If someone's charging you a fee, next week's column will show you what you should be getting, or say 1% is a lot of money in an environment where the banks pay you 0.25%. I'm rolling to Fidelity or Vanguard or Betterment or Wealthfront.
I love how you say it, and also with the level of confidence. This is what I want. I'm asking you for it.
It's your money.
It's your money.
Nobody
right.
cares more about you than your money.
Exactly.
You worked hard to save it and
yep.
accumulate it. Pay attention now as you roll into retirement.
I love it. So, Terry Savage, you're going to have part two up when?
It'll be up next week at terrysavage.com. This Fiduciary Fee Fight, part one, how to do this, is up now, terrysavage.com.
Great. Terry, thank you so much for being on the
you,
show.
Suzanne.
Love being with you. Coming up after the break, we're going to have on Chris Perry, the executive director of the First 5 Years Fund and the author of the new book, Love on Trial. Welcome back to the Wintrust Business Lunch. It's Suzanne Mutian sitting in for Steve Bertrand. And a lot of times I have guests on the show. You hear me. I say, oh, so-and-so is one of my favorite people, right? Okay, but really, honestly, this is like with your kids where they all want you to say, oh, you're my favorite. But Chris really is one of my favorite people. So we have Chris Perry, who's the executive director of the First 5 Years Fund. And she's also the author of a new book that we're going to talk about called Love on Trial, which is available everywhere, local bookstores, Amazon. And she and her wife, which we're going to talk about, her wife, Sandy, are going to be at the Seminary Coop on Monday, the 12th?
Yes.
All right, Chris, I'm so happy that you're here.
I feel the same way.
All right, so let's dive into it. You and I met in the middle of all of this. I think it was around 2008. Is that right?
Yes, we met right when the election occurred, which is when they passed this marriage ban in California. It happened to be on the very same day that the 44th president of the United States, who was from Chicago, was elected. On that very same night, the voters of California passed a ban on marriage on same-sex marriage.
Called Prop 8.
Correct.
So it was a great night and the worst night
yes.
at the same time.
Bittersweet.
Okay. So you and I meet, and you were and still are the executive director of the First 5 Years Fund, an advocacy organization for early childhood development. And I remember we were sitting in the conference room at my company back in the day, and you said you were talking about early childhood as a civil right. And I don't think, meaning everyone should have access to high quality early childhood development. And I remember at the time, because I didn't have the frame that you were in the middle of this battle around Prop 8, that of course that's where your mind was. So the journey ends in a way that almost everyone in America will remember. This was June 26, 2013.
Yes.
Okay, so let's just go to that day and then we'll back up.
Sure.
So what you'll all remember is we're watching two decisions come down from the Supreme Court on the same day. There was DOMA and also Hollingsworth versus Perry.
Yes.
Perry as in Chris Perry.
Yes.
That's you.
Yes.
And I remember that the runner came down.
Yes.
Is that what they're called? Like, right, with the decision.
Yes.
And sure enough, DOMA passes and Prop 8 is, you know, not held up.
Well, they struck down the
they
ban.
They struck down the ban.
Yes.
And all of a sudden, there is marriage equality in the United States.
Yes.
Okay. I have chills right now. I can't even imagine that day. But I now want to rewind the tape, because in your book, Love on Trial, which I read cover to cover this weekend and recommend everyone do the same, it is spectacular. You describe how you and Sandy made the decision to become plaintiffs, and that one of the things you decided to do, you have four sons, was to go and sort of get permission from each of them. And I'm wondering, knowing what you know now about how this was, because your life got turned upside down, would you have approached them differently? Would you have said anything different to them?
Well, it's true that we know a lot more today than we knew then about being plaintiffs in a federal lawsuit. So yeah. The benefit of that knowledge would be incredibly helpful. But let's just say we have no more knowledge. I would make one adjustment, which is I would have had us all sit down together and talk about it versus the one-off meetings that we ended up doing because they're in and out of the house at different times. So that would be the main thing, is to let them talk about it with each other too.
And it does seem that your life got sent into kind of a spin of many kinds.
Yes.
What was the hardest part for you?
Well, unexpectedly, right before the we were going to be in court for the very first time, there was a scheduling hearing, a calendaring hearing. And the judge at the time was going through his calendar and he looked up and he said to our counsel and the opposing counsel, actually, I'm going to set this for trial. That had never crossed our minds. No one had ever even mentioned that this was a possibility. There had never been a trial on a case like ours ever held in the U.S. And so we were suddenly struck dumb by this possibility of testifying, being deposed, having possibly being cross-examined, and all of the things that come up in these trials. That, frankly, this is all based on very personal information.
Of course, right.
It's based on these really important feelings. And the thought that we might be put up and in some ways embarrassed or humiliated in front of our children or our parents was really surprising and a little terrifying. Luckily, those worst case scenarios didn't happen. And the best case scenario did happen, which is we built this huge case record that has since traveled on in the appellate courts and helped lots of other plaintiffs.
There's a moment in the book, too, which I have to ask you about, where you actually in the book have transcripts from the Supreme Court, which, again, is riveting. I know there's been an HBO documentary, The Case for Eight, but in the book Love on Trial, there's a plenty of transcript from being in the room. How do you sit on your hands? Do you bite your nails when you're listening to judges talk about issues so very personal to you, but moments of kind of inane conversation, like whether or not people over the age of 55 can procreate? I wouldn't know how to control myself.
Well, you know, you have to control yourself because the room is filled with guards. And they are they
you can't
stare
stalk
at
the
you.
Bench.
Yes, there are very strict rules and protocols for how you will watch a Supreme Court argument. The thing that was fascinating, in addition to all of the interesting questions they had, and they interrupted our attorney, Ted Olson, and the Solicitor General almost as soon as they started to talk, but they also interrupted opposing counsel. The interesting thing was to watch all the nonverbal behavior among the justices, many of whom had some either dissent or opinion in this area over the course of the past few decades. So we were watching Thomas carefully and Scalia carefully and Kennedy, who everyone believed at that point in time was the deciding vote. They were all engaged very differently, but you know, yes, we literally sat on our hands.
Oh God, I would have to.
Many of the people that we were hoped to sit by, we weren't near at all. Our children were in another row, but we were right behind Valerie Jarrett and Nancy Pelosi, and they were on the edge of their
seat.
I mean, the courtroom, you could have heard a pin drop.
Yeah, that's how I felt reading it.
Yeah.
So now we're in this moment where, you know, so the end of the story, which is the good news, is you get married for real. Legally, you and Sandy get married. Mm-hmm. And in theory, life is good. And yet here we are. And it is 2017 and we have the Trump administration. What is the feeling you have now about where we are?
Well, not so different from where I was when I met you, which is when I think about the youngest people in our country and how vulnerable they are, how much protection they need, and how much we should be lifting them up so they reach their full potential. I feel the very same way about all kinds of people with all kinds of identities, that the most important thing we can do is have policies and laws that lift people up and protect them and allow them to contribute to society in the most productive ways they can. In this situation right now with this administration, lots of messages are coming out of the White House that aren't positive, aren't lifting people up, and aren't making people feel protected. Yeah. Whether the policies change also, we'll all see. But we hoped when we wrote the book that it would be a bit of a cautionary tale.
Yes.
That we went to court. It took 5 years. We came out winners. Not everybody does. We're happily married now. We're protected under the law. But at the same time, there are no protections for LGBTQ employees in many states.
Right.
So there are examples of people getting married on Sunday and fired on Monday. This is a really problematic time where our federal rights are sort of being evolved it's iterative. And what I'm hoping with the book and with all of the work that people do across the country on human rights is that we keep pushing back. When we hear somebody say they want to roll back the clock, that we say, no, no, no. These rights were hard fought and they were won because we want to make sure Americans are protected.
And we keep paying attention.
Yes.
Chris Perry. See how fast this goes?
It's
so crazy.
So fast.
Upsetting. Well, look, you and Sandy are going to be together on the 12th. Is that right?
Yes.
And you're going to be at the seminary co-op.
Yes.
Did I say coop?
You
I think
did.
I said like coop, but
I thought
like,
maybe because I'm not from Chicago,
no,
I don't know. It's, I think
Bennett
it's co-op.
Bennett can probably correct me. I think it's probably the co-op also. So you're going to be there with Sandy on Monday. The book Love on Trial. In bookstores everywhere. I really can't recommend it enough. So, Chris, thank you so much for being on the show.
Thank you for having me.
Welcome back to the Wintrust Business Lunch. It's Suzanne Muschen sitting in for Steve Bertrand. You can follow me on Twitter at Big Payoff Radio, Instagram at Suzanne Muschen. And I think I just said before that I had one of my favorite people on, and I think I said that to Adam Ockstein yesterday too. But really, now I have my favorite
person
on.
Yay, me.
See, this is just how I feel like it is. It's like a party in the room when you're here.
You should have been in the green room. It got crazy.
You and Chris, nutty.
Crazy.
Like, yeah, I can imagine that. So Amanda is the CEO of Jelly Vision. And I think what most people think about Jelly Vision, maybe they think about You Don't Know Jack or the old game stuff. But you do have this pretty robust, big hitting thing called Alex. So first of all, tell me what this is and what problem it's solving.
Alex is a platform that we license to mostly large employers to help them help their employees choose their benefits. One in four millennials would rather clean their toilets than choose their benefits.
Is that a fact?
It is a fact. So we use some of our roots in gaming to get people to pay attention, charm them a little bit, so that we can basically sell some advice. We do the math so that people can make good decisions and not waste money around health insurance.
And Alex is character.
Think about it. It's not a virtual game show host that makes fun of you and asks you hard questions. It's a virtual advisor who gets to know you and what you and your family need, what you care about, and then based on what your employer actually makes available to you, says this plan might be best and let me explain to you how it works.
But
so
your
you feel
interaction
smart.
with Alex feels oddly human.
It does. It feels like you're having a conversation with a person just behind the screen. That's the intent, is using real human cadence of a conversation to seek first to understand and then explain. So shoulders come down, pulses slow down, the furrowed brow goes away, and you can make a good decision as fast as possible and then get back to anything else in your life that you'd rather be doing.
And so is there a human being at Jelly Vision who sits in a booth and that's Alex?
Yes.
Is that name known?
No.
Oh, we can't reveal who that is?
No.
Wow, that's crazy. So how do you come up with that persona? I mean, everybody, we've actually talked, Steve and I, on the show about how they came up with the name Alexa. It must be a process.
Yeah, it was an 8-person brainstorm when we were coming up the name for this character. We had originally launched the product and called it the Jelly Vision Benefits Counselor, and the host's original name was David. And people kept calling it David or the David. And it's the humanity imprints.
Yes.
So we said, all right, going to rename this thing. We're going to name it a name. And we wanted it to be sort of a platform and a product and a name and gender neutral. We had all these great, you know, aspirations. And then Alex Meal, who was then and is still now our vice president of implementation, said, you know, Alex is a pretty good name.
It's very welcoming. There's something about it. Like, hey, Alex.
Simple, short. Yeah. I wish I could say it was much more scientific.
Yeah,
we hired a really great consulting firm. But it was a brainstorm and someone recommended their own name and we agreed.
That sounds boring.
14 million employees later have access to the platform.
I was expecting a better story.
No, come on. Not on this one. Not
I feel
on
like
this
you need
one.
To make something up that's way cooler than that
story. I'll work on it. I mean, in no small part, a lot of Jelly Vision has a history of doing stuff that isn't done to amuse ourselves.
Right.
I've got to have a better story for that for sure.
So that's one of the things I'm curious about. So as you said when you opened, people really get bored and don't engage with their benefits and making those choices. So it has to be kind of boring content, and yet Jelly Vision is known for being this cool, fun, crazy place. How does that sync up? I mean, do you believe that you have to love the content of what you do to love your job?
So I don't know if we love the content of what we do, but we love the net effect, which is we're not selling insurance. We're selling help. We're selling advice.
Yeah.
We're selling the easing of a furrowed brow.
You're the Botox of health
something like
benefits.
That. So while we can take our work very, very seriously, we don't take ourselves seriously. And don't be boring is a core value. Our product is not boring. Our people are not boring. And that makes for a more fun workplace.
And is the essence of the skill set that has to be in the room that people really understand how conversations flow? Because that seems to me a kind of magical thing to create. The cadence is one thing, but the language itself, how do you even do that?
There is an art to simplification.
Uh-huh.
You know, writing something short is harder than writing something that's 17 sure. pages long, believe it or not. And so we have an incredibly arduous recruiting process where we look for that talent where you can be logical and you can be simple and you can be charming and you can write for the ear as much as you write for a screen. There are very few diamonds in the rough that can pull off what we do, and we have sort of recruiting mechanisms for finding them, and then we treat them well, and we give them snacks, and we're very kind to
you
them,
do
so
have
they
good
stay.
Snacks.
We have snacks.
I've seen the snacks. Now, the last thing I want to ask you is, so now how many companies, a lot, are using Alex?
Last year, we ended with more than 850, mostly enterprise customers.
Which represents how many people using?
14 million.
Okay, that's insane. What are you learning? What is there anything surprising that's come out of all of that usage of Alex?
It's not surprising that people appreciate help. What's surprising is how much they give back the charm and humor that we give them. Alex averages about 3 marriage proposals a year where people write in, are you single? I wish you were my husband.
I don't know if that's adorable or kind of sad.
It shows that you can make anything boring and people will play along.
Yeah.
The fact that something can be beloved that deals with health insurance
kind of a win.
Goes to show that you can insert charm and delight and it's deeply appreciated and meaningful anywhere. So don't be boring.
That's a good message in life in general. Cocktail parties.
Indeed.
On the radio.
All the live long day.
Okay. Well, Amanda Lannert, CEO of Jelly Vision. And if people wanted, is there a demo anywhere people could see?
The website is jellyvision.com or meet Alex, M-E-E-T, Alex, not M-E-A-T. Although
the marriage proposal thing might
suggest. I have no idea what's under M-E-A-T. So
maybe you should find out.
M-E-E-T-A-L-E-X.com.
Okay. meetalex.com.